KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
And I see Dr. Berry has joined us. So we will, I think KPTZ airwaves are probably rolling. We will welcome Dr. Berry and tell us what you've learned in the last week, Dr. Berry.
Thanks for having me. So the COVID update today, looking nationwide, we are seeing cases largely flat and still at that relatively high plateau. So about 70,000 new infections are diagnosed every day in the United States, and 1,200 people are still dying of COVID-19 every day. So we're at least seeing cases flattening, but we aren't seeing them come down to the rate that we used to see before this most recent surge. And that is concerning for setting us up for a pretty significant sixth wave with the holiday season. Looking at kind of regions having the most activity, we see that Alaska still leads with the highest rates of COVID-19 infection and hospitalization. We're also seeing pretty significant activity in kind of the Mountain West, so you know, like Montana area, and also the Southwest as well. At this point, 750,000 Americans have died due to COVID-19, and 50,000 of those were since October 1st. So this is still a very active infection. One of the kind of common pieces of misinformation I hear is the idea that this is done. It's a past pandemic, and it's unfortunately still very much a present one in our community and in the country as a whole. In Washington State, we are also seeing a plateau of infection. The current case rate in Washington State is 386 per 100,000. Interestingly and somewhat concerningly, we are starting to see a rise in hospitalizations. So we had plateaued hospitalizations, but we're seeing them rise again. That seems to be primarily driven by those over 65 who are unvaccinated. The vast majority of those over 65 are vaccinated, but for those who are not, we're starting to see them contract the Delta COVID-19 variant and get hospitalized at higher rates than ever before. So we're following that closely, but it is starting to put strain on the hospital system, again, statewide. In the region, Clallam County is slowly improving. We are at 293 cases per 100,000. Kitsap is at about the same rate, 291 cases per 100,000. In Jefferson County, we are seeing our numbers getting better. We currently have a total number of COVID-19 cases diagnosed at 1,196. Our current case rate is 182 per 100,000, down from 250 last week. Our percent positivity is 7.6, so still a little higher than we'd like to see. We'd like to see that number get down below about 5% at this point. We do have two of our citizens currently hospitalized, one locally and one out of town. You might notice the person out of town has been hospitalized for months at this point. And I share that because I think it's important for us to know how much this can affect a person's life. This is a person who was relatively well before they contracted COVID-19. And they have unfortunately been had to be hospitalized for this very long period of time. We have lost 17 of our citizens to COVID-19, and currently 73% of those who are getting infected with COVID-19 are unvaccinated in our community. And that's very similar to what we are seeing in other parts of the state and the country. We do have a higher breakthrough rate than other parts of the state, and that's largely due to the high number of us who are vaccinated. That is expected when you have a large population of fully vaccinated people. But we tend to track with the state. So in Washington State right now, as of today, if you got infected today, you're 5 times more likely to get infected with COVID-19 if you are unvaccinated, and you are 12 times more likely to die of COVID-19 if you are unvaccinated. We do get questions sometimes, including one this week, about why we look at the data for such a long period of time in Jefferson County, starting with about April, for the breakthrough infection numbers. And the primary issue there is just our population. We have such a small population that it's really hard to get statistically significant data. And so in order to get enough numbers to actually have meaningful results, we have to look at them over time. But we also look at the state data, which is calculated daily, and that tracks with ours as well. So they're still seeing that difference. It hasn't gone away. We're still seeing you're more likely to get infected, more likely to get hospitalized, and more likely to die if you are unvaccinated, if you get COVID-19. Otherwise, locally, we are continuing to work very closely with our schools. We have had two small clusters of outbreaks locally related to our schools. We have one football team affected. They have four positive cases associated with that team. We're working very closely with them. And then we have one kindergarten class affected as well. They have four positive cases there. Those are the places where we do anticipate some transmission. Until very recently, kindergartners did not have access to the vaccine. And sports teams continue to be one of the places where we do see transmission. People just get really close together. Primarily, we're seeing transmission off the field in locker rooms or in transport to and from games. That's where we're seeing most of that transmission happening. Okay. Otherwise, oh yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I missed earlier what our number per 100,000 over 2 weeks was. And then I just want to confirm that with the kindergarten group and the football group, we've confirmed that transmission happened at that in those settings.
Yes. So our current case rate is 182 per 100,000, which is down from where it was at 250 last week. Still quite high, but certainly moving in the right direction. We have confirmed in each of these instances, yes, the transmission was there. In kindergartners are one of the few groups that really can't distance very well at school. It would be inappropriate to ask them to. And so we know that that's a space where that can happen. It's part of why we are so excited to see vaccines become available for this age group. We hope that that will reduce the likelihood of something like this happening in the future. The good news is all of those kids are doing really well. And we're working closely with that class to make sure that we don't see any more transmission beyond that. And that, of course, is the biggest news, is that the Pfizer vaccine got approved for kids 5 to 11. So now any child in Jefferson County, 5 or older, is eligible for getting vaccinated. We are very excited about this. I think, as we've discussed a little bit in the past, there's a common misconception that kids are not affected by COVID-19, and that is just not true. Even if you just look at the 5 to 11 bracket, over 8,000 kids in that age group have been hospitalized, and a third of them required ICU level care. I don't think any of us want to see any of our kids affected that way. 30% of the kids in that age group who got hospitalized had no underlying conditions whatsoever. They were otherwise healthy kids who ended up in the hospital or the ICU. I, as a parent myself, I very much understand what I hear from parents where they say, I'm nervous about getting the vaccine. I want to be cautious. I want to wait. And it is always appropriate as a parent to be cautious. But what I want to stress is, as a parent, the way to be cautious with your kids' health is to get them vaccinated. Kids are much, much more likely to get severely ill from COVID-19 than any vanishingly small potential risk from the vaccine. When we look at the side effects found in the trials of the Pfizer vaccine for kids, the most common side effect by far was a sore arm. Then after that was fatigue and a headache. Kids actually were very unlikely to get fever or chills or some of the things that we see with older age groups. And we have had no serious side effects found in the Pfizer vaccine trials for this age group. It's really important for parents to know COVID-19 can be quite serious for kids, and it can be surprisingly serious in otherwise healthy kids. The vaccine is very safe. It's effective. It was 91% effective at preventing any COVID-19 infection in these kids. So it's a really important thing to do to keep your kids healthy. The other key thing to know is the highest age range that gets hospitalized for COVID-19 is actually kids 0 to 4. So if you have other kids in your household, that is one other really good reason to get your eligible kids vaccinated, so they're less likely to bring COVID home to your younger children. It's a really important step to protect your kids. And of course, if you as an adult have not been vaccinated, it's really, really important for you to get vaccinated and really vaccinate the whole family, not just to keep from bringing the infection home to your children, but also to protect yourself. We luckily have not had any young people die in Jefferson County of COVID-19, but we have lost six parents in Clallam County, six young parents, parents of young children, who are now going to have to grow up without a parent. We don't want any of our kids to have to go through that. So the biggest thing that we can do to protect our kids is to vaccinate ourselves, and then to go forward, and if they're eligible, to vaccinate those kids as well. The other key thing to know is we're not just protecting them against hospitalization and death. The age that is most likely to experience multi-system inflammatory syndrome related to COVID-19 is actually kids 5 to 11. And getting them vaccinated prevents that as well. We also see that kids can be affected by long COVID. So a disturbingly high proportion of kids who get COVID have long-lasting symptoms months later. They have fatigue. They have pediatric brain fog. So they struggle in school. They struggle with persistent shortness of breath. We don't want to disable our children. So it's really, really important to get them vaccinated to prevent that as well. One commenter last week had a question about the buffer used in the pediatric vaccine. So it's something called Tris buffer or trimethamine. This is a neutral buffer. It's called an inactive ingredient. There's a long history in FDA approvals that we, when it comes to the testing, we test the active ingredient. And if the inactive ingredient is if the inactive ingredient changes, but it's an otherwise safe inactive ingredient that we've been using for years, that process can be done. You don't need to repeat the trial. So that's a very stable, known process at the FDA. The Tris buffer has been used in countless pediatric medications before and has been very, very safe. It also is the same buffer that's in the Moderna vaccine, which has been delivered to millions of people. So very, very safe. Not something you're going to see a significant reaction to. The only thing that would cause you to have pause with that buffer is if you had a significant allergic reaction to the Moderna vaccine, which of course our children have not had because they have not had access to that vaccine. So very, very safe, very small change, not anything I would be concerned about at all. And the one other question that I got last week, just a little bit after we finished, that I wanted to touch base on was kind of the question about, and I've actually gotten a couple more emails since then, about proof of vaccination requirements for gyms. And really, a lot of citizens asking whether or not we're going to add gyms to the groups that are required to show proof of vaccination. I think it's something worth considering. Gyms are one of those places where we see people take off their masks. Similarly, pools are another place where we can't mask when we're in a pool. It's something we considered with the original order. Really, the biggest reason why we didn't move forward with it was because as the health department, we don't permit those facilities in many cases. So it's a little harder to have an enforcement mechanism that's health department focused. But if there is a lot of interest in the community, I think it's something worth considering. And I think it's good to remember that as a gym, you can already require, you can already make that, that decision to become vaccine only. And I would encourage our gyms to consider it. There are a lot of citizens who say they are not going to the gym right now because they don't feel safe, and they would feel a lot safer if everyone there was vaccinated. So with that, I'm happy to take some questions from our commissioners.
Greg?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for touching on the Tris buffer. Good to know that I've, as a Moderna recipient, have had it and I had no allergic effects. So thanks for diving into that a little bit. I was wondering if you could go a little bit into the antiviral pills with Pfizer on the cusps too. I'm wondering if that changes the vaccine conversation, if it's an effective, quick antiviral treatment. I guess, how does that inform your thinking about vaccines and the requirement for vaccines, really, specifically?
So yeah, there are some promising data coming out about these antiviral treatments. I think it is very exciting. It's very promising, but I also don't want us to overinterpret it. So those studies were all looking at reducing the risk of hospitalization in high-risk people who contracted COVID-19. So primarily giving this to people who are 65 or over, who have significant underlying conditions, and it did reduce their hospital hospitalization, in some cases as much as 50%, but 50% of them still got hospitalized. Some of them died. And so I would say that the antiviral medications are going to likely be used very similar to monoclonal antibodies. They're a really important thing for people who are unlucky enough to get a breakthrough infection or for folks who are at very high risk of severe disease to prevent their hospitalization, but they are not a replacement for vaccination. They are an adjunct to vaccination. The best protection you can get right now is to get vaccinated. But then this will be one other tool in our toolbox that we can use for folks who are at very high risk of severe disease, for those in long-term care, things like that. And I'm mostly excited about both the efficacy of these medications and their utility. That, you know, right now with monoclonal antibodies, you have to be observed for an hour, you have to get an injection, it's a whole process, versus a pill could be prescribed and you could take it at home. And that's really hopeful. I do think that these are gonna come out. We're not quite there yet, still too early, but I do think that when these are distributed, they will be an important tool for us. But the key thing to know is they are most effective if you take them within 48 hours of symptom onset. So it's really important that you get tested quickly. If you feel sick, go ahead and get tested right away. That's also important for monoclonal antibodies. The earlier you get them, the better. And it just gives us a lot more opportunities to keep you safe.
And on that note, then, I guess, two other questions, hopefully pretty easy. How are we doing on testing supplies locally and nationally? And then I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to how much enforcement has been necessary with restaurants and bars. What's the reaction generally? If you could just kind of talk about the tenor of the business owners, really, specifically.
Sure. So as far as testing supplies, we do have adequate testing supplies for symptomatic folks. So you can get tested, you know, either through the drive-thru with Jefferson Healthcare or walk-in clinic, or if you're a close contact of a case, we distribute tests out of the health department. And we've had a lot of positive response to the COVID-19 test kits that we've distributed to some of our more rural areas that have more trouble accessing testing. So by and large right now, if you are sick, you can get a test. But one place where I am worried about the supply chain is kind of asymptomatic employee testing. If this kind of federal mandate comes down and there's just a dramatic increase in the need for weekly testing, right now the supply chain couldn't handle that. So I am hopeful that I know the federal government is looking at that along with this mandate. And so I'm hopeful that they will do some work to improve that supply chain before that mandate comes down. Because right now we just don't have adequate supplies for that. But we do have enough for symptomatic folks. But it's still tighter than I would like it to be. As far as outreach to our local restaurants and bars, just gonna get out of this bright light. By and large, we've had a really good response. The vast majority of restaurants and bars in our community have moved forward with following the order. If we do get a report of a restaurant or bar that isn't, we reach out to them with primarily the first thing is an educational call to try to get, try to help folks understand. One of the most common misunderstandings we have is that a restaurant or bar will think that just kind of posting that you have to be vaccinated to come in is enough. It is not. You actually have to check. We tried that with masks before and we saw how well that worked. So we do need to actually check and make sure that people are vaccinated. But usually restaurants are really responsive to that call. We help them understand the situation, teach them how to check it. And generally that goes quite well. We have not had to move forward with any with revoking any permits for any Jefferson County business. We've so far had 100% success at getting folks on board with following the order. But we are a small department, and so we can't do widespread spot checks throughout the county. We do rely on people notifying us if they try to go someplace and they notice they aren't checking. But do know you're not getting anyone in any trouble. We're going to call them and educate them and help them through the process. We don't, you know, just swoop in and take permits away. That's not how we work. So let us know. We're happy to work with folks. I think the other thing to know is that our food safety team has been working with these restaurants before. They are a known quantity. And so we can partner with them to make sure that your eating experience is safe in every possible way. Both your food is safe and the air you breathe while you're there is safe.
Just have a couple of questions. And I would say, don't get out of the bright light. You are a bright light in our community. And we get a lot of positive feedback and about your leadership on this crazy train we've been on for the last 20 months. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out. just drilling in on the gym issue a little bit, the question I got, which I think I forwarded to you, was about the YMCA, which is a little different than gyms, although I understand that they're probably licensed and permitted as a gym, but that elderly and young people use the YMCA facilities more than maybe a standard, you know, membership gym. And so I did reach out to the YMCA and they said they have interest in Jefferson County, but maybe that Clallam is less interested in this rule for their facilities. And so I don't know how we can help address the concern that I'm hearing from multiple people in Jefferson County about the YMCA of Clallam Jefferson not requiring vaccination proof to enter the facilities, especially around the swimming pool. And the swimming pool is really multi-age. And my guy was worried about the pickleball courts, which Commissioner Brotherton and I obviously have an interest in. I have to use those this winter.
I do think that's an important distinction. I am considering the Y a gym, but it is really a resource that our citizens use, especially I have a lot of patients who are elderly and have joint troubles, and really the only way they can exercise is in the pool. And we don't want to take that away from them. So I'd be happy to do some work on that. I know that I've heard that even the Clallam side is interested in it, but they have been a little bit scared of some of the pushback that's going on in Clallam County. So I'd be interested to see how we can move that forward, at the very least in Jefferson County, if not in Clallam, because I also am hearing from a lot of citizens in Clallam County, a lot of elderly folks who really want to use that space, but don't feel safe doing so right now. And I think that's one critical thing that sometimes gets lost in this conversation, is that we are really looking at, you know, freedom of movement of high-risk people and how to make sure these places are safe for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll be working that.
Let me know if you need a partner in that adventure. I'm happy to help.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And the other question I had is just about Thanksgiving or holiday logistics. So I have a history of having a large Thanksgiving gathering in my very small dining room, and my friends and family are interested in doing that again, but we are limiting the number of people this year, and there's still a lot of reticence. And I said, well, we could do rapid testing at the door. You know, you'd have to stand on the porch with a cocktail for 15 minutes while your test results came in. So I've been trying to figure out where I could get rapid tests. And then I looked online and there's a million brands and, you know, varieties, and I don't know how to pick which one to get. So looking for a little consumer education here about rapid tests.
Sure. So yes, when it comes to gatherings for the holidays, if you're looking at a fully vaccinated indoor gathering, that is still really, really quite safe. You want to be thoughtful about any unvaccinated members of the team, particularly the very small people, and limiting the number of unvaccinated people that come in. Doesn't mean you can't have any kids, but you want to have mostly vast majority vaccinated adults and a small number of unvaccinated kids if you're going to have any unvaccinated kiddos. And then particularly be thoughtful about where those kids have been. So did those unvaccinated kids just fly on a transcontinental flight? That dramatically increases the risk that those kids are bringing COVID-19 to that space. And so I'd be very cautious about that. But you can add safety to your gathering by doing some rapid tests. So we do feel very confident that a rapid test provides you a good 24 hours of non-infectiousness. So if you test negative on an antigen test, you really shouldn't be infectious for at least 24 hours. Coming up on 48 hours, but it gets a little fuzzier on the 48 hour end. As far as efficacy, kind of the gold standard one we've done the most testing on is the Binax Now tests. Those are very good. They are hard to come by. That's one of the places that people know that name is a trustworthy source. There are a couple other ones out there, and I'd be happy to do a little digging and make sure we can put some some ideas on our website, because I think probably more than yourself are interested in that that information. Because there are some that are better than others. And you, if you're planning for the safety of your family, you want to make sure you're using a good product. So we can share that information for sure.
That would be great. And this is an abundance of caution because my entire crew is vaccinated. So we're just next level precautioning.
Then you can feel very safe about your holiday gathering for sure.
Yeah. Mark, did you have any questions for Dr. Berry? Well, I see that Willie has joined us, and let's dig into our KPTZ questions.
Okay. Hi, Willie. Welcome. So looking at the KPTZ questions, so one is, I am 78 years old and wondering whether I should get a full dose Moderna shot as a booster rather than the half dose because of my age. This is particularly a person who's planning on mixing and matching. So you can mix any of the vaccines for your booster. The best data is mixing or adding an mRNA vaccine. So if you got a J&J, getting an mRNA for your booster, or if you got a Pfizer or a Moderna, you could get one or the other, and both have shown some efficacy with mixing. So the primary question, though, is do you get a full dose or you get a half dose for a booster? And really, we are seeing that the data is very strong that a half dose is an efficacious booster. The only people that really need a full dose Moderna shot are those who are immunosuppressed. So unless you have moderate to severe immunodeficiency, either you're on immunosuppressing medications or you have cancer or something, or a genetic immunodeficiency, some known cause for immunodeficiency, really a half dose should work just fine for you. And really give you a good effect. Going for a larger dose, if you have a high functioning immune system, will just increase your side effects without really increasing your protection. So go ahead and get a regular booster dose with the half dose, and you should do just fine. Other questions. Looking at the vaccine requirement for restaurants and bars. One listener was asking, why don't we require vaccination for staff? And so I should be clear, we strongly encourage vaccination for staff, but it is not technically required in the order because they can wear masks at work. If they do remove their masks over the course of their work for whatever reason, if their job for whatever reason is causing them to have to take off their masks, they are required to work. But we're really primarily to get vaccinated to work. But we're really primarily focusing on the risk that comes from being indoors, unvaccinated, and unmasked. So that's why they're not included. But we do strongly encourage all our restaurant workers to get vaccinated. That is a high-risk profession just because of the nature of that work. And we really encourage those to move forward with getting vaccinated. But as we experienced recently with the prevented outbreak that we had, it does really work to have the patrons vaccinated and the staff masked. We don't see any transmission when that happens. We encourage them to get vaccinated as well for a variety of reasons. This person also let us know about a couple places that aren't following the order, and so we'll give them an educational outreach. And also gave a shout out to the Rose Theater that is doing a fantastic job at checking vaccination status, and I'm glad to hear that. One question was about ventilation. So we talk a lot about ventilation and how to reduce the risk of transmission. Primarily, we talk about kind of the simplest form of ventilation, which is either being outside or opening windows. That gets a lot more air movement. And that's really one of your most effective ways. The other way that you can increase ventilation and reduce risk of transmission is having an HVAC system that is actually regularly circulating air, especially if it's filtered. So if it's got a HEPA filter on top of it, that actually does make a difference as far as reducing viral transmission in that space. This person was particularly talking about when you have people coming into your house, say a worker who you don't know their vaccination status, or you know that they're unvaccinated and you're worried about getting COVID-19. We actually did have a case study of this in Clallam County. Unfortunately, we had a worker working on the HVAC system who was positive for COVID-19, and that actually did blow the COVID-19 in the house. And so that is the one occasion where more ventilation is not good. The person otherwise, there are a couple different ways you can minimize your risk. One is to keep some space between you and that person. Say they're working in one room of your house and you're in another room. We do think that the air, if you have closed rooms, that air will fall to the ground within 70 minutes, and then it won't be a risk to you anymore. If you open those windows, that's an even shorter time frame. So sometimes just kind of isolating certain wings of your house can be helpful. Otherwise, really the biggest thing is to open the windows after that person was in that space. Or you could add a HEPA filter if you have one. Those can all reduce your risk. And of course, wear a mask when you have someone else in your home whose vaccine status you don't know. Those are kind of the best ways to reduce your risk. One question was about looking at the different infection rates in people who are vaccinated versus not vaccinated. We discussed this a little bit at the start, but just to reiterate, the reason why we look at vaccination rates and infection rates over time in Jefferson is because of our population. Our population is low enough that we can't get statistically significant data day over day. That's also why you see we only update the infection rate once a week, because otherwise it would just bounce all over the place. So that we really need enough data to get meaningful results. But Washington State does calculate that number day over day. We have linked this to our Facebook before, but I'll make sure that we link one of those, the most recent report, to our website as well. So people who are graphically minded and data minded can really dig into it. But what you can really see, for those of you who have video access, is the graphs split. So you do see with the Delta wave a small increase in infections among vaccinated people and a dramatic increase in infections among unvaccinated people. We do really see that split very widely. And we do see that this most recent rise in infections with the Delta wave has been still vast majority unvaccinated people. But yes, I'm happy to share that information at the state level. That's just the closest we can get with the population that we have. The only other kind of most similar data that you could get is Kitsap County, very similar, same virus, very nearby, similar kind of economic, socioeconomic breakdown. They also break down their infection rate by age and by vaccination status. So you can dig around on the Kitsap County Public Health website as well if you want to see how that breakdown happens. One question asked if the booster shot is open to the general population yet, and it is not. So in order to get a booster shot, you have to be over 65, living in a high-risk space like a long-term care facility or a prison or a shelter, or you have an underlying condition that puts you at high risk of COVID-19. Now, that is a lot of our population, but it is not all of our population. The primary reason for that is we have not yet seen the data that shows that young people who aren't either living or working in a high-risk setting, like healthcare workers, and who don't have an underlying condition, we don't have any evidence that your vaccine isn't working. Primarily the data on loss of vaccine efficacy is actually people 75 and over, or people with underlying immunosuppression. Everyone else, our vaccine is still working really, really well. I do recommend a booster dose for healthcare workers because it's so critically important. You do get a lot of exposure in your job, and we can't have you bring COVID into that space. But otherwise, if you're young and healthy, you really don't need a booster. You do need to get vaccinated, get fully vaccinated, and wear a mask in indoor settings when you're around unvaccinated people. But otherwise, you should be really well protected. Let's see. One question was, is it realistic to think that we will return to the 1% positivity in tests and 75 per 100,000 network metric whilst the Delta rages? Are the vaccinated hitting these metrics? So there's kind of two different numbers there, and it's probably important to understand what these numbers are. So I always start off by kind of rattling off a whole bunch of numbers in the beginning. So one is that case rate. So it's case rate per 100,000. I've definitely had people ask, we don't even have 100,000 people. Why do you report it that way? And the reason we report it that way is so that we can compare across populations. The places with bigger populations will have more total cases. That's expected. And what we really want to see is if you make us all equal, say all of our counties had 100,000 people in them, how many cases would we be getting a week? And so that's what that number is. That tells you your disease burden. But that number is only meaningful if you also know your percent positivity, because otherwise, guys, percent positivity tells you how well you're doing at actually finding all the cases in your community. So for instance, in many parts of the east side of the state, we're seeing a plateau in cases, but we're seeing percent positivity rise. And so what that means is we're not actually seeing a plateau in cases. That's just the maximum number of tests that they can do. And so actually their cases are rising, but we're not picking them up because we don't have enough tests to do it or enough people doing the testing. What we are seeing is a relatively low percent positivity, not quite as low as I would like. I'd like to see it lower than 5%. I don't think we need to see 1% at this point, but lower than 5% would give us some good confidence that we're catching all of the or a large majority of the cases out there. And I do think it's very reasonable for us to get back to 75 cases per 100,000. We've been there the vast majority of the pandemic, but we do have to get more of us vaccinated, be thoughtful about our interactions, wear our masks. I do think we can get there. As far as whether or not the vaccinated are there, so roughly the vaccinated are 5 times less likely to get COVID-19 than the unvaccinated. So our current case rate is 182. Very rough math. That means your vaccinated folks, their case rate is about 36. So yes, they are there right now. It's a little bit more complex math than that, but that gives you kind of a rough ballpark of what you're looking at. So I do think we can do it. Now the challenge will be we're coming right up against the holidays. And so I do anticipate that we're gonna see a surge, but the height of that surge really depends on how many of us get vaccinated and how many of us wear our masks and be thoughtful about our gatherings. If we're thoughtful about our gatherings, if we wear our masks, if we get our kids vaccinated and any of our remaining adults vaccinated, that surge can be very small and we can get back to normal much more quickly. Couple other questions. We're almost there. We had a lot of questions this week, very good questions. Last year at this time, we heard a lot about COVID being spread by people who were asymptomatic. Is that still the case with the Delta variant? I don't seem to hear much about asymptomatic spread anymore. So we've also, around that same time, just learned a lot more about COVID-19. And so as far as how Delta is spread, you are incredibly contagious in the 2 days before your symptoms start. So in that pre-symptomatic period, and also in the first couple of days since your symptoms started. So it's really that early infection is when you are the most contagious to other people, but you are very contagious a couple of days before your symptoms start. That's what's called pre-symptomatic spread. So spread before you know you're sick, and you can affect a lot of people in that time if you're getting around a lot of people and not wearing a mask. And so that's actually why that pre-symptomatic spread is why we have all these interventions. I've often heard from folks, well, if I'm not sick, it's fine, but you don't know if you're going to be sick in 2 days and will have exposed a lot of people in that time. Now, truly asymptomatic spread from people who never develop any symptoms, we actually think is relatively rare. A lot of what was driving the asymptomatic spread thought before was really PCR testing. And now we know that PCR stay positive for, 8-12 weeks after a past infection. So what was coming across as asymptomatic infections were actually probably past infections. And you've already infected the people you were going to infect during that time. But pre-symptomatic spread before you develop symptoms is very real and still very real with Delta. Last question is, my 32-year-old daughter got the Pfizer vaccine in January of 2021. She is now 3 months pregnant. How important is it that she get a booster shot? And I would say it is actually very important. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology strongly recommends boosters for all pregnant people. The reason why is COVID-19 is very risky in pregnancy, and it is certainly much less risky for those who are fully vaccinated. But it's a risk that we don't want to take with any pregnant person. And we know that when you're pregnant, your immune system functions differently. And so we want to make sure that our pregnant folks have as much protection as possible. We think about pregnant people along the same lines as immunosuppressed people during the period of their pregnancy. And so we do encourage boosters for all pregnant people. The booster is very, very safe in pregnancy. And so we would recommend going ahead and getting your daughter boosted. And with that, I will pass to Willie to, I'm sure, enlighten us more on our pediatric vaccination plans.
Thank you, Willie. We've been hearing great reports, Willie, from the booster clinic on the weekend. Great reports.
Good stuff. No, thank you. We have, again, huge credit to the public health team, the DEM team, and all of our volunteers. It's a pretty well-oiled machine at this point. We've made lots of little tweaks to make sure that the experience is as smooth as possible for everyone. And I also do want to thank the folks coming in to get their booster doses. A lot of them had received their initial two doses from us at one of our big mass vaccination clinics. So they knew the drill this go around as well. So that made everything just kind of run that much smoother. So 676 folks got their booster dose on Saturday. And this will be our last entirely booster dose focused clinic for the remainder of this month. Things are going to be a little bit different for us this Saturday as we have our first 5 to 11-year-old clinic. That will be at the Blue Heron Middle School in Port Townsend. The afternoon will be booster doses for adults. Both of those sessions are completely full up at this point in time. 360 booster doses in the afternoon, just 200 5 to 11-year-old doses in the morning. We've reduced the output of the clinic just because we know kids are going to take a little bit longer than adults. We want to be able to give them the time and attention that they need to make sure that them and their parents are comfortable and we can get them through safely and quickly. So yeah, that'll be a lot different. We'll see how that goes. For all the parents who've signed up, we appreciate you. You've could have gotten communications, and if you haven't already, that'll be coming this week as part of your confirmation on what we expect from parents. You know, things like wearing, it's going to be cold out. We know your kid's going to want to wear a jacket, but something that's, you know, not too much layering to make it easy to get to that arm when it comes time to get the vaccination. Bring something to entertain them with. There will be a 15-minute waiting period. And again, explain to them kind of what's going on, what's happening, what to expect to make sure that they're comfortable and ready to get that shot. We know a lot of kids are going to be nervous. We know in a mass vaccination setting, they might feed off of each other a little bit. So if, you know, one child starts having a difficult time, that might worry others. So the calmer we can keep everyone, that's going to be all the better for everyone involved. So we'll see how Saturday goes. The following Saturday on the 20th, we'll be back in Chimicum, and due to the overwhelming initial response to the first couple of 5 to 11-year-old clinics, that will be an all-day 5 to 11-year-old Pfizer clinic. So 200 slots available in the morning, 200 slots available in the afternoon. The morning session is about halfway full, and there is still an abundance of space in the afternoon. So if you are the parent of a 5 to 11-year-old child and you want to get your child vaccinated, there is space for you on Saturday the 20th. So do go to the public health website, call us 344-9791. We have a ton of space. And what we saw when we first made the announcement, the Port Townsend Clinic filled up immediately. The morning session of Chimicum filled up about halfway. Almost immediately, then we opened up that afternoon session, and it's been a slow trickle since then. So I think all the really anxious parents were able to grab their spots. But for those of you on the fence, those of you who haven't been able to make the time to find that appointment, again, we have plenty of appointments for you available on the 20th. So do reach out and get us signed up there. From there, again, for these 5 to 11-year-olds, we will have to do a second dose in December. We have those clinics scheduled. And we're still deciding what our December offerings are going to look like in terms of booster doses for the general public. I know that a lot of the pharmacies, Safeway, QFC, here locally, as well as in SWIM and in Kitsap County, appointments have been booked up for a couple of weeks out. So that's been difficult for people to find some quick appointments there. Mark and his team at Tri-Area Pharmacy have been doing an incredible job. They do accept walk-ins every weekday morning from 9 to noon, I believe, but I do confirm that on the public health website. Sometimes the wait gets up a little bit there, but again, they can accommodate walk-ins, stop by, check in, and see if they can get you in there. They do offer Pfizer booster doses there. So we'll make an announcement once we figure out what we'll be doing in December. But in the meantime, as I've stated before, the 5 to 11-year-olds are our first priority for the next couple of weekends. So we're excited to have them out. Again, thanks to the for all the support on that. You know, parents, get ready. This will be a our first clinic. This will present some new challenges for us. So we appreciate all the good feedback, and we'll see how we do with the younger crowd.
And I do want to share that I was just on a call with Jefferson Healthcare as well, and they did receive some Pfizer vaccine for use in a well child check. So if your kid is scheduled for a well child check and you want to really talk to your pediatrician about the vaccine and your concerns, if you have any, they also have some to support you there. They don't have enough to do a full mass vaccination. They're really encouraging kids to utilize these resources that we've set up. But if you really need to have that direct one-on-one conversation with your pediatrician, that is also available.
Any other questions for Willie? Commissioner Brotherton, Mark?
You know, I'll just echo that I've also, you know, not we had Ruth Gordon, our clerk, came on this morning to compliment the booster clinics. And I've heard others, you know, you guys are dialing it in. I bet you're gonna be ready for the kids.
Confident. Yeah, my clinic was expertly run as well, just clockwork.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Both of you, thanks for all the work on behalf of our community. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
See you next week.
Take care.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting.